After review, Fulham now commits a careless challenge and stands on the foot of the Chelsea defender. We restart with a Chelsea free kick.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yeah, here on transfer deadline day. Yeah, we're all in our yellow ties. Terry's in a rather fetching summer dress, all yellow. Come on, give us the twirl, Terry.
Hello.
There you go. Easy there, fellas. Dong. Easy there, fellas. Come on now. Things have changed a lot since you were around Sky Sports Studios. It's not Keys and Grey anymore, guys. You know, come on. I'll be off to HR anymore to lip from you.
See, I've got to get these gags in now while you're still not able to get the video thing working. Because obviously it would all fall flat when someone's watching this on YouTube and they can clearly see you're just sat there.
In a grey polo. Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
I think we should still carry on doing that anyway and just allow the viewers to just imagine. Yeah, just to tell the viewers that actually this is made for the ears and not for the eyes. But, you know, we want to get on YouTube because it's good for the engagements and stuff.
Apparently so. It's just because you've always wanted to put videos up with our faces doing bizarre reactions, isn't it?
Yes. This is my dream. Soon to be fulfilled.
Ah, yes. And you think we've had enough of video this weekend, wouldn't you, with VAR and everything. But let's save the VAR conversation. Yeah, because the transfer deadline stuff is still unfolding. I've got a little ticker going on in the background. I don't know why. I mean, we'll see what happens. We're going to be here for the next 3/4 of an hour just gabbing about the weekend football and about all the things that went terrible over the weekend. And if something big comes up, then we'll be right here for you. Right here with our reactions. Obviously, our reactions won't be on a YouTube video, but you'll have the audio equivalent of them, and I think they'll be pretty special, won't they, Jan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is where the takes happen, Graham. Take yeah. Central.
Well, let's have a talk about what happened over the weekend, because there was some odd results, some pretty predictable results. I have to apologise, listeners, all the readers of the Weekend Box Set, because there were some really dire games in there this weekend. Leeds-Newcastle was an absolute snorefest. The Old Firm derby was just horrendous. And Arsenal-Liverpool was really saved by a worldy free kick. It was not a good game to watch, I would imagine, for anyone, really. It wasn't a good game for me to watch, but I don't know if you got anything out of it, Jan, apart from just one free kick.
Yeah, well, I think that's maybe slightly unfair. I thought Arsenal generated a good fair share of chances, and they clearly went for it. Interesting that their record away to like City and to Liverpool is really poor under Arteta, which I didn't realise how challenging they find it going away from home to those sides. But anyway, yesterday it looked like they were giving it a good go, as I said. But yeah, undone by Szoboszlai's worldy free kick, which was unbelievably good. I wouldn't say it was a snore fest, but it was. Yeah, it could have done with a few more highlights, I think.
Yeah, you can mix up that stat about how terribly he is away to top six sides. The defeat yesterday was his first one, I think, in 22 head-to-heads against the traditional top six sides. So it's, yeah. And I think someone put out today about how Guardiola's record at Anfield is terrible and yet still manages to win the title. There are narratives to be had, and I don't think the narratives really bore anything out from what happened in the game. Terry, did you watch the game yesterday, or did you find something else to watch?
Well, Dortmund versus Union Berlin was on the other side.
Now, that sounded like a cracker.
I had both games on, as it happens, because of the unique way that I watch Bundesliga on Sunday afternoons, because I won't pay Amazon $3.99 to watch a game of football. I just won't. And also, I was writing my newsletter. Uh-huh. I have decided that Sunday afternoons is actually the time to write my newsletter while the other football is on. I appreciate there are some drawbacks to that strategy, but it seems to be a good time for me to do that. So I didn't pay the Liverpool-Arsenal game much mind, But I'm sure if there'd been a bit more end-to-end excitement, then I suppose it probably would have done. But yeah, Dortmund obviously off to winning ways in week two against Union, against a relatively tough Union side. So that was quite enjoyable to watch.
And yeah, obviously you were quite happy with Sunderland's win against Brentford at the weekend. After an admittedly tough game against Burnley, which you did pick out, you did bring your opening day excitement down to earth quite sensibly. But then good times are back again. Is this what it's going to be like? Home wins going all the way through now?
Well, maybe not all the way through, Graham, but it's good to see that they've picked up a couple of wins. Well, two wins in their first two home games. It's easy to get carried away looking back now with the West Ham result, because West Ham were so bad and had continued to be up until yesterday. My friend actually was at the game as a season ticket holder, and he said Brentford are a different class compared to how West Ham addressed the game. And to beat a Brentford side, they were pretty good. It is a real statement, I think. Enzo Lefebvre started the game because of some injuries, and he was unbelievable. He was the best player on the pitch. He was really good. He was everywhere. He was tracking back, defending, cutting out passes in the middle of the pitch. And he scored a penalty, and he trapped the ball out on the left-hand side. Passed it to Xhaka, who put the ball straight onto Isidore's head in the 96th minute or something like that, which is fantastic. Cue some incredible last-minute scenes at Sunderland, which seems to be one of the things that seem to happen at the stadium like quite a lot these days. But great for Wilson Isidore. He had his birthday on Friday. His daughter, his first child, was born on Saturday, and he scores the winning goal in a Premier League fixture on the Sunday. So that guy, and he is an absolutely wonderful guy. You know, he had the best week of his life. So I think that topped the whole thing off nicely.
Yeah, it certainly did. Terry, did you finish your newsletter in time to watch Palace's mighty win at Villa Park?
Yeah, just in the nick of time, actually, to be able to watch that. And I'm so glad that I did. I mean, obviously, I was thrilled with the result and with the performance, although mitigated by the fact that Aston Villa were truly, truly dire. That team has gone into fairly sharp decline. I know they weren't tremendous last year. They had their moments, obviously, because they had a European campaign. So I'm sure Aston Villa, seasoned Aston Villa watchers, and I know we do have a number of listeners who are, will not see the decline as being sharp, because they have to see them every week and it must be ghastly to watch. But yeah, that was a poor show by them. But a tremendous performance by Palace, really rising to the occasion, especially after what was a difficult experience in Fredrikstad. They squeezed their way through that game. I was a little bit worried, but I mean, Mark Gahey's strike is, I mean, he is a talented boy, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he does stuff like that in training. You know, that was quite an extraordinary strike from him, and really gratifying. And two goals from open play, and that's now 14 games unbeaten for Crystal Palace, 10 of those in the top flight. That is a record. The last manager to do that was Steve Coppell back in the early 90s, in the season when Palace finished third in the league. So yeah, it really can't get much better for Palace, really. Well, I mean, I suppose it could, but yeah, scenes, guys, yeah. Absolute scenes.
Yeah, I think it comes to something when Palace wins 3-0 away from home and you don't find it that shocking.
No.
The result was impressive, but if someone said to me, Palace won 3-0 at Aston Villa, did you know? And I thought, actually, yeah, that's kind of on the cards, I think, at the moment. What wasn't on the cards for me was West Ham winning 3-0 at Forest. Now, I know we're still only three games into the season, but that's a win that I didn't see coming. I don't know about you, Jan.
Well, not see coming, but it was surprising only because West Ham have been so poor up to that game.
Yeah.
They finished the season last year quite well. Bowen was on fire in the last maybe 10 games, maybe. And he got one yesterday as well. But I think maybe that flatters West Ham, the result yesterday, because of what is happening behind the scenes at Forest, which may have had absolutely nothing to do with it. But these things tend to bleed onto the pitch, don't they? The falling out between Nuno and Marianakis, publicly falling out, which started last season on the actual pitch. I wonder if that's had an effect. You see this with clubs with kind of strange ownership or mad ownership. West Ham have not got the most stable ownership. They struggle. I think you said, Graham, at the beginning of this season that you're not expecting Forest to do well. They started okay, but then came unstuck there. You know, Spurs have their problems because they've got crazy ownership. Manchester United have their problems because they've got crazy ownership. You don't just need stability on the pitch and have a decent coach. You know, you need it all the way through the organisation. Sorry, the long answer is not surprised that West Ham got a win, but equally not so surprised that Forest collapsed like that, given what's happening off the pitch.
Yeah, Terry, did you suddenly think, how the hell did we only get a draw against Forest last week?
That did cross my mind. Palace's record against Forest is not great. I think they're something of a bogey team. I wonder whether or not maybe the occasion, the atmosphere in the stadium was a bit rancorous. So I don't know if that was the issue, but I have to wonder now. I think we did say, like, towards the back end of last season, we worried about Forest and about what that might look like. I mean, thinking about their PSR, but also then thinking about the owner, and he is a fairly tempestuous character, it is said. And obviously, yes, it does appear that there's a disconnect, to say the least, between him and the coach, and that's never good, and that will have to be resolved. There's no way that doesn't filter into the dressing room. So yeah, I mean, interesting times for Forest, and that's nice, because I do hope that Forest live in interesting times.
Well, the interesting times that we had this week were, of course, mostly down to VAR. And the first apology of the season. Hey, it seems to come earlier every year, doesn't it? It's only taken 3 match days for the first apology to come in. And it came for Fulham in what I would think is in one of the most horrendous VAR displays for a while. Was it last year when we had the offside between Liverpool and Tottenham? But this one really, really did honk. Jan, have you taken time to analyse it from lots of different angles and come up with any sort of idea about why this could have happened?
No, it's really unforgivable. It was good to see that an apology's been given, but it still effectively changed the game and possibly robbed Fulham of a result there. I actually saw this happen live in Dalman Airport in Turkey. And I was sitting at a bar watching it. And that happened, and I said to my son, in a joking kind of way, it's an oft-used phrase, the game's gone. And a second later, another guy who was obviously waiting for the same plane, a British guy, came up to me and just went, game's gone, mate. and off he went. But if there was ever an excuse to allow that to be tried out, it's this one. Yeah, so Rodrigo Muniz was adjudged to have stepped on Chalobah as he pirouetted round to release the ball for Josh King, which I thought was a beautiful bit of play, a great bit of skill, and he landed on Chalobah, but I don't think it was a stamp or even a step. Where else is he going to put his foot?
Yeah.
He was just turning around, and Josh King scored a perfectly good goal, I think, and it should not have been ruled out. It's funny, my son called it straight away, and he went, they're going to pull that back. They're going to pull that back, and you know, he was right. But I think the thing that really is bizarre about this is that the referee went to the little TV screen on the side of the pitch and reviewed it.
Yeah.
And still ruled it out. And I can't understand how that would ever happen. There's no universe, apart from the one we're in now, where that isn't a goal. Crazy decision. Yeah. And really, really poor refereeing as well.
Yeah, it was. The only thing that I could think of was the fact that he was just looking at the freeze frame incident of the foot going down on the other foot over and over and over again. And I don't know why, because you could see what had happened. But Chalobah is not being challenged for the ball. Muniz is in charge of that ball. It's his ball. And Chalobah just sticks a foot in, and it lands underneath Muniz's foot. If you look at it in the passage of play, you look at it in real time, it is just bizarre how they come up with that decision. Terry, have you got anything that could rescue this decision at all?
No, I mean, like you, I mean, obviously, the only thing I can think of is that they were fixated on the fact that its foot appears, certainly if you're a referee, it appears like some kind of stamp. Mm. But I mean, I can't see how that can really be perceived as such. You know, I mean, I'm thinking back to the Lewis Skelly sending off, of which, you know, we had some discussion. That, for me, as I believe I argued at the time, that I could certainly see why that was initially given as a foul. But that was overturned.
Yeah.
And so fine, if that is what it is, then that's fine. So how was this not even looked at? Because that's even more innocuous. It's even more of a... I mean, you guys have summed it up perfectly. The guy is in control of the ball. He's performed a fantastic manoeuvre. It's not his fault that Chalobah has decided to stick his foot in where he shouldn't. It is a twisted logic that suggests that actually it's a free kick against Chalobah, but I mean, I mean, if we're in this realms of idiocy, then we could possibly make that argument. So I can't find any reasons to redeem it. And I have to say, it's unnerving, a complete breakdown in apparent understanding of the laws for which they are paid to enforce. And I can only imagine that what's happened is that the referee has been called up. And I think we've discussed this before. There's a culture, it seems, of sending referees back, I think is the expression. Mm. And that it's a negative and it's not a good thing and no one likes to do it. But I think at the same time, I think there might be this reverse culture of saying, well, I've been sent back, so I must have made a mistake.
Yeah.
And this whole thing feels cultural to me.
Yeah.
The whole thing feels as though PGMOL are developing perhaps a culture of paranoia, or at the very least anxiety, about VAR and about the use of VAR, which I think that needs to be looked at if indeed that's the case. Or, you know, questions need to be asked as to whether or not that is the case. But I think that there seems to be an anti-goal culture.
Mm.
You know, this VAR is not a tool to try and stop goals from being scored. It is a tool to restore sporting justice. That is what it's supposed to
be.
I mean, it doesn't do that either, but I mean, that's what it's supposed to be.
Hmm.
So I don't understand how you're thinking, there's a collision there, there's a coming together there, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing to even look at that. I'm not even going to ask the guy to have a look at that, because that for me is absolutely fine. You know, if the referee doesn't see that on the pitch, I don't know. It plays in nicely into the anti-VAR narrative, but really, I mean, you know, a lot of this as well, if you were pro-VAR, you would just say, look, I'm sorry, but these guys just don't know what they're doing, and that's the problem. And I've actually got a degree of sympathy for that argument.
I can see why people would have that argument, say, look, there's nothing wrong with the system, it's just these guys don't know how to use it properly. But this is not a new system now, it's been around for a long, long time, and we are still seeing the same problems with it. And every time they go back and they try to change it, they fail.
Mm.
The people who say that it's the people using it rather than the system itself will happily trot out how it works perfectly well in World Cups and European Championships, or it will works perfectly well in foreign leagues, when we all know it doesn't work perfectly in those foreign leagues. And it working in the World Cup is such a small sample, and often helped by the fact that FIFA are in control of all the replays. They do not show you replays from multiple angles on especially contentious decisions. So you will not see that level of analysis that you will see on Sky, on TNT, or anyone who is covering the Premier League. It's a different level. But also, people who use that argument also want both consistency and common sense. In a common sense situation, they will say, why didn't he just use common sense there and allow play to continue? And they will also say, all we want is consistency. And as we've always said on this podcast, when it comes to VAR, you can have consistency, you can have common sense, you cannot have both. And the problem with VAR as a system is that it's always going to be in a battle to marry the two together. A fine example of that is the penalty decision, which I think, given what the rules are now, was the correct call. It was a stinking call because Sessegnon's gone up to block a shot and it's hit his arm. Now, his arm, it's not in that unnatural position, but it is away from his body. And he is making himself as big as possible. So you could say, well, he is blocking the shot there. And in the current way that we have handball rules, which have been changed over and over and over again to become more consistent, common sense goes out the window. So now we have, this is a handball. And most people are now comfortable with the fact that it's a handball. People will say, well, this will be given as a handball now. Well, this is what tech has done. This is the position that we're into for this. But there is still no excuse, really, for that Fulham goal to be chalked off. And yes, they've apologised, but what does that give Fulham? What does that do for the game? They're not going to replay the game. This isn't Germany, is it?
If Fulham miss out on a European spot, or worse, by 2 points?
Yeah.
I mean, do they sue PGMOL?
Yeah.
Because obviously the rest of the game has to be played, and just because Fulham score doesn't necessarily mean that they win the game. But I mean, the game is defined by goals and not referees. There's an argument to replay the match. I genuinely think there's an argument to replay the match. That's, once there's been an acknowledgement that a mistake has been made, then there's an argument to replay the match. I mean, I appreciate that that way does lead to madness.
Yeah.
And I'm not arguing for it. I'm just saying there is an argument for it. And I wouldn't blame any Fulham fan for wanting to see that. But I'm fully expecting a referee to even out that goal at some point in the future. You know, you know, for Fulham. because I think they're due some karma, and it's rough on them.
Yeah.
As we constantly say, I mean, 99% of the population of football players don't play under VAR. It's only this weird, hokey, like, system in the elite level. It's at the top level. It's the best players play under an inferior system of officiating. And it is inferior. I'm sorry, but it is inferior. In the rest of the world, look, we talk about universes. In this universe, that goal stands. Because in the overwhelming majority of situations outside of the Premier League, that goal stands. Because the referee sees it, it's fine. Conversely, it doesn't stand because we don't have players with that kind of ability who can pull off those kind of manoeuvres to be able to set up that assist in the first place. And that's what's so bloody annoying out of it, is that good players' talent is being wasted because people are dicking around with television screens. And to be perfectly honest with you, the best thing to do, it would be, and this is not a nostalgic trip, this is an acknowledgement that the referee's decision is final. Even if it is incredibly annoying and piss-boiling at times, the referee's decision is final, and we have to acknowledge that they will get these things wrong frequently, and we just have to accept it. That didn't happen on this occasion, but from time to time, they will get things wrong. And if you are going to use VAR, then use it in the most ridiculously obvious errors. But actually, you'll find at the elite level, you don't get many clear and obvious errors. That's the really annoying thing about this. Referees, generally speaking, are quite good. It's just that it's like their confidence is being undermined by some dude in Wembley, in North London, who's like saying, well, I think you've missed something there. Like a painter and decorator who's got somebody telling them that they've missed a spot. It's not how you do it. I think scapegoating that guy I thought was poor as well. I'm not being funny. This is a systemic problem. It's Howard Webb's fault. He should be fired.
I agree with all of that. And just to add to it, it made me think when you said that if Fulham were going to miss out on Europe because of that. And this was one of the arguments when VAR was brought in, wasn't it? So,
yeah.
You know, it will stop people from being relegated when they shouldn't be. It will make sure that people qualify for things that they should do. And we're still talking about that. And it was supposed to get rid of poor refereeing decisions. Well, this is a refereeing decision that was poor, and it's because of that. So the millions and millions of pounds has been spent on this technology. It slows down the games. It's making them sterile. Who was it? One of the coaches said at the weekend that games are becoming sterile.
Scott Parker.
It was Scott Parker.
Scott Parker.
Yeah, and he said you're not far. And this has been said not just on this podcast but by many other pundits that you're getting to a point where you're not going to be able to celebrate a goal. I actually think that we are not too far away from that now, because if I was a player now. If I was Josh King, next time I scored a goal, I'd just stand there and kind of go, or walk over to the monitor. Just make some kind of statement about it. If you want to do a funny celebration, but actually one that means something, then walk over to the monitor. I'm going to wait until you tell me whether that was an all right goal, because it's fucking ridiculous and it's destroyed the game. It really, really has. And I hope that this is some kind of line in the sand, that this is the tipping point, if you like, where we go, something's got to change. Because if you're a Fulham fan now, and if you're any of those Fulham players, you should be mad as hell, absolutely mad as hell, because the system that is set up, Terry, you said it correctly, is inferior, and we're supposed to be the finest league in the world, and it's a crock of shit. Really is.
Testify.
Long-time listeners will know how we feel about technology. Also will know that we support referees, largely.
Unless they make decisions against our team that we don't agree with.
Oh, then we don't. Of course not. Well, that's different, Terry. This is our podcast, and we are free to be as hypocritical as we like when it comes to our clubs. Yeah, if that had happened to Arsenal, I would be absolutely incensed. I really would. And so I think Fulham fans have every right to be annoyed, or just to feel, well, yeah, this is what happens to us when we go to big clubs. This is what another thing about VAR. People always thought that VAR was going to be a leveller. And I think that's what most people thought it was going to be brought in for, because they thought, well, this is going to stop big clubs getting decisions for them. My little club is going to have more decisions for us because it's always big clubs that get the rub of the green. And it's not the case. This has not been a leveller. If you're a person who thought VAR was going to be good because of that, then you should know by now that that's completely wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
And we did say it here first. Correct. It was definitely here first.
We've been saying it for so long.
Oh my God.
Well, anyway, let's move away from that and let's move on to other news. Not such good news, though, actually. It's about managers getting sacked. And actually, I think it could be a bit of a conspiracy going on here, Jan. So prick up your ears, because maybe you've got some thoughts on this. Now, I'm a big James Bond fan, and I like to read the books of Ian Fleming. And in Goldfinger has this great line in it when he says, one is happenstance, two is coincidence, three is enemy action. So when three former Man United managers are all sacked in the space of 5 days, 5 days? What the hell is going on there? Any ideas, guys?
Aliens.
You expect me to talk?
Terry, how surprised were you to see that Erik ten Hag was sacked by Leverkusen?
I was surprised, of course, because you cannot not be surprised when a manager is sacked after 3 games. But they were literally 3-1 up against 10-man Werder Bremen, who are among the favourites to be relegated this season. And so, obviously, something's not right there. So they decided to rip the Band-Aid off straight away. And I genuinely feel bad for Ten Hag, because despite outward appearances, I do think he's a good coach. He was a good coach. He literally won trophies for Manchester United. But, I mean, this is clearly a really, really bad fit. And a lot of it will be down to Simon Rolfes, who is the sporting director, who hired him. Actually, you have to look further up, you know, and Fernando Caro as well. And those guys who say, well, if he was that bad, then why did you hire him? He's clearly not the right fit. You should have done your due diligence. So that didn't happen. And I feel bad for everyone. Well, it's Leverkusen, so let's not get carried away. But I do feel bad for everyone concerning that. But I think that that's a bad situation to find yourself in. But maybe it's for the best, you know. And I'm sure Ten Hag, once he's gone back and licked his wounds, he'll be back at work and has plenty of time left in his career to turn things around and restore his dignity. But it can't be nice. I mean, it's the managerial equivalent of being subbed off when you are yourself a sub, isn't it? It's just, it's grim.
I mean, I don't think anyone was surprised to hear that Mourinho's been sacked. I mean, like, you know, he's been there a little while now. So, and it's Mourinho. He always gets sacked. And Solskjaer, obviously, as well. I think he was the first one, wasn't he, Solskjaer? I think that was the order it went in. I think it was Solskjaer, then Mourinho, and now Ten Hag. But yeah, it's all happened very, very, very quickly. And, well, if Amorim hadn't engineered a last-minute recovery in the match against Burnley, he could have joined them, do you think, Jan?
Absolutely. I actually worry for that guy's state of mind. Because look at his, well, some of the things he's been saying, I mean, for me, it feels like he's seeing the writings on the wall when he said they can't change 22 players again. And, you know, he refused to watch the penalties in the League Cup game. And in the win at the weekend, you know, sitting with his feet up in the dugout, just did not look like a guy who is in control. You know, you'd expect a coach, and I know obviously everyone's different, everyone's got a different approach to these things, but you would imagine somebody who's fighting for their job would be on the touchline barking at the players. You know, the players are letting him down here. It's a difficult situation to see somebody, I think, falling apart like that. It's awful to watch. But I think that's what Manchester United does to you. And to be fair to Amorim, when he was approached, if you remember, he said, I want to come at the end of the season. Yeah. I want to wrap things up here and I want to come at the end of the season and we'll do a proper changeover then. And I think that would have been the best thing to do for all parties involved. Manchester United didn't want it that way. They wanted it their way. And now they're reaping the whirlwind. And there's no way that guy's going to be in charge by Christmas. And I think that's being generous. Either he's going to walk or they're going to get rid of him. And, you know, he'll go somewhere else and do quite well, probably. Because he's at a basket case of a club with absentee owners and a really mad minority shareholder that runs the show. And the weight of expectation having taken over and expected to deliver what Ferguson did. It's a poison. That is the most poison chalice. And it's a shame. And if you remember when he first went there, I was actually in Portugal at the time and I was chatting to a local and he said, that's just another talented Portuguese manager that's going to go to England and have his career ruined. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happened. So it's very sad, I think. Yeah. Sad for him.
Yeah. You say he's going to leave a club and go somewhere else and do better. But from what we've seen this week, that may not be the case. The rot may go that deep. It's horrific, isn't it? We were making jokes about it, weren't we, when Amorim was given the job, because basically his credentials, his list of credentials was pretty much the same as Ten Hag's when Ten Hag got the job. Whenever Amorim finally gets the boot, and it will be probably too long away, they'll have the shortlist and they'll have whatever the next flavour of the month manager is from Europe and bring him over. And then they'll just go through exactly the same thing over again, won't they?
My personal theory is that they will string out Amorim for as long as they possibly can. One, because they don't want to pay him off, because they've demonstrated that they are very, very close to their pound. And I think that the other thing is that I think that Oliver Glasner is not going to renew his contract at Crystal Palace. And I think that that is the probably the guy that they would like to think is lined up as their next guy. But I think that Glasner is not daft enough to jump ship at this point and go to Manchester United, and I think Palace would make a massive, massive stink. And also, given what happened to the last coach, I think he's going to insist upon starting in July with a full pre-season. Is that a prediction? No, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened.
We've pretty much made it to the end of the episode without talking about transfers. Some football podcast we are on transfer deadline day. Oh, dear. We can't tell the punters where Nicholas Jackson is right now, what he's doing, or whether Mark Gay is actually going to Liverpool or not. I'm sure he will, eventually.
Yeah, I mean, it might be May. but at this rate, it'll probably be May. But, I mean, I think it's going to happen. Yeah, and Nicholas Jackson, well, you know, people have got, like, plane trackers now, so they don't need to key it from us. You know, they will know about this before we do.
Do you think Flight Radar now has caused a dip in the people watching Sky Sports News? Do you think they actually see them as competition on transfer deadline day?
You've got your Flight Radar on one corner of your screen, you've got your Fabrizio Romano live stream on the other, and then maybe, yeah, you might have the yellow ticker of Sky Sports going on, but frankly, yeah, it's all a little bit linear TV, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you do need to have Transfermarkt in the corner there just for the actual facts, the evaluations, and so you can work out your net spend over the summer.
Oh, God. If he doesn't go, I'll be mad as hell, because we have a Chelsea loanee, or had a Chelsea loanee, Marc Guiu, and he was recalled from loan. He scored for us in the League Cup, which we went on to lose. So that's affected us as well. So if he doesn't go to Bayern,
yeah,
I will be mad, because we've missed out on a talented player.
Yeah. Chelsea will do that, though, won't they, Terry?
Yes, they bloody will. They're not to be trusted with loan players, because Trevor Chalobah, of course, was recalled, which was bloody annoying. But then Chelsea, what can you say? They're a really awful...
Could you say that again?
But they are.
Say that again, Terry.
Sorry?
Say they're a really awful football club again.
They're a really awful football club.
Yes.
Chelsea are a really awful football club.
And again. Say it loads of times.
Chelsea are a really awful football club. Then you give it a go.
Chelsea are a really awful football club.
Brilliant. That's really cathartic, isn't it?
It feels is.
We should, instead of doing our warm-up, we should just start with that every week.
Maybe we should.
It's a bit of Stephen Toast energy going on with all of that. Chelsea are a really awful football club.
Yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango. This does actually make a perfectly good replacement to the Weekend Box Set chat that would normally be here. No, don't worry. I haven't banned the Weekend Box Set for its rubbish picks last week. It's not serving a one-match suspension. No, it's international break, obviously. Finally, the international break is here, so we can all sit back.
Thank God for that.
Thank God. We can all sit back and watch some international football. I won't be. I'll be going to the Emirates on the weekend to see Arsenal women play London City Lionesses as a new season of the WSL starts. So I'm really looking forward to that. But, of course, if you do want to see what we think about the weekend fixtures in future, then get along to sofpodcast.com and subscribe to the Weekend Box Set. You'll find links on there. Go to Substack and sign up through there. And sign up to Terry's new newsletter, Association Rules. Yes. And he's doing one a week, aren't you?
One a week. Yeah. Although I'm in Germany this weekend, so I probably won't get the chance to do one this weekend.
Well, that lasted long, didn't it? 3 weeks into the season.
I don't know. It's an international break. I'm taking a break, international break. Yeah, of course. Yes, absolutely.
Well, that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Nuno and Marianakis. Nuno and Marianakis.
Nuno and Marianakis.
Marianakis.
Marianakis should be how we pronounce it from now on.
That's what we need to do. Marianakis.
Marionakis. This is Mario. Marionakis.